Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our intelligent conversations, our wise conversations, brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. Also want to give a shout out to Luke Jones, who's been running around with the Ravens all week. And you can always get the breaking news on the Coons Ford text service. But the Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast, getting us here and there and everywhere. And Chicken Palooza's over, but the chicken's still delicious. Makes a great tailgate, perfect for the game at home, away, take it with you or whatever. And I don't take in Ravens games without this guy. Everybody sees that I sit with my wife up in section 513, have for 18 years. I've been up in that section since 1998. We sold almost 1,400 PSLs up in those sections of 513, 12, and 14. Don Moeller sat way up top in the beginning. He's way down at the bottom with me the last two decades. And we have at least kicked off another season where we've got together and we've hooted and hollered and we had a great game. We had a great crowd. And the football part of this and then the baseball part that, you know, you're saying goodbye to that part of the season. It really is an interesting juxtaposition this time of the year for our little recon conversation, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, and I'll leave the X's and O's and who's playing and who's not playing. We're going to win some. We're going to lose some. I'll leave all that to you and Luke. You do a great job with that. I was more intrigued. A couple things about when we were together at the Kansas City game. And
well, they don't play at home again for 3 weeks, right? So, well, like, it's a whole
– Yeah, I missed that. But what I was stunned by, and I had come off you know, I have the red zone, and you and I sometimes will text during the red zone. You made a good point that the NFL doesn't survive by – fans in the seats. I was struck, including Pittsburgh, when you watch the red zone, and I challenge anyone to do this on a Sunday, the amount of empty seats around the NFL is staggering. It catches my attention, and I get the economic model that you say that's not what they're counting on. It's not where they do it, which I was fully prepared for 10,000 seats to be empty on Sunday, because Sunday's hard. It's a night. You got to go to work. And Nestor, that place was packed. I mean, there may have been 1,500 empty seats, but I don't think there were more than 1,500. And the energy, we were talking, the boys and I were talking. You have a much better memory for this stuff. What was the last home game? Obviously, it wasn't last year because we went there. But what was the last home game where you remember that kind of electricity? We were having trouble coming up with it.
It would be Flacco era, and it probably, you know, when we lost so many games, Don, you know what I mean? Like, we lost a lot of big home games during all of that era, which is why we wound up playing on the road. We rarely won. Right. Big game. We lost to Cincinnati. We lost to Pittsburgh during those periods of time. We had disappointing finishes. We were the wild card team most of those years because we lost some of those games. So I remember Tom Brady coming in and it being tough for us. And I remember, now that being said, the era and the noise that I heard the other night, I would say the Chiefs game, it was as loud as it's been in this era. And it was boisterous and raucous, and it was not that way in the beginning of the game. I feel like the end of the game had a crescendo in it in a way that, like, Ray Lewis dancing used to in the beginning of the game. And so, Don, do you remember how much hell was rained down on Peyton Manning the first series?
Yes.
When he came in here in 06?
Sure.
We don't have that anymore because it's not the same people every week.
Well,
and this goes to my point with you, where I turn around and you're behind me. I looked over all the seats where Bobby Nix sat. Our Chiefs fans now. Don Scott still sits there. Tom Marr's brother Brandon's above us. I turn around and I see a handful of people in the seats behind us that are the original people. Part of that is age.
Yeah.
You're in your 70s now, you know,
sure.
Like, and part of that is economics or motion in life. I know of 5 divorces in the section. And I will say this to you because you weren't there. Before we got there very early before the game, I was in my
seat. I would have been there. You know, I like to be there early. I was panicking. There was an accident on 95, and my guys, we were like, Are you kidding me? The first game in 18 months. But, man, we booked it up that side street. We made it. But, yes.
I had a dear friend of mine, Steve Shealy, who sits in our section, who came up to me. And he was alone. And he looked good. He looked, you know, healthy. Looked great. And he came down. And I didn't have to ask where his wife was. He said, I lost my wife a year and a half ago to cancer. And, you know, so you – people have changed in the section. Sure. People have moved around in an area that was like a church. And I'll just say this, Don. I've been doing this a long time. I'm pretty perceptive. I'm pretty semi-famous in certain circles to walk around and have people know me or say hello or whatever. That was a different crowd at the Chiefs game. And it might have been you and me. But
what I wanted you to talk about it just looked to me like – Ravens
yeah,
fans.
Well, I see things differently, and I know areas of tailgates I've walked through. Don, I've walked through downtown for 20 years.
I'm not arguing with you. It was the same people
everywhere. Everything's different now, post-plague. The crowd's much younger.
What does that mean? Listen to my question. I'm trying to zero in. I'm not arguing with you. I know you believe it, which means you're probably right. You're very perceptive. What does it mean? And I don't mean that as a challenge. In other words, I look around and I see 70,000 football fans, and you know, a lot of them are drunk, a lot of them are nutty. It's to me, it's like what I've always seen. You said something looked different, and I want to know.
I'm trying to answer this, Don.
Oh, okay, go ahead. What's different?
What's different is the people, the human beings. They're 26 years old. They did not see Ray Lewis dance. They're 31 years old. They look to me like they got a brand new Lamar Jackson jersey on. These are the fans that need to replace me when I give my tickets up next year. So these are the people that need to buy season tickets.
Okay.
They're now offering, by the way, for $44 on a promotion. Okay. This didn't exist. They were begging me to give them $1,000 for the right to buy the seat. Now they're letting you have a season ticket for $44. A game. So younger people are participating in some way, but I think it's different people. The people that will or will not be, all those Chiefs fans had those seats. Somebody else is going to be in those seats next time. There were 4,000, 5,000 Chiefs fans at the game. Yeah. Those seats need to be replaced by someone else that's not a Chiefs fan 2 weeks from now when the Chargers come who don't have any fans, the Colts who might have some fans, the Bengals who used to bring some fans when Marvin ran the place and they were decent, that they need to be replaced. So let's see how the season goes out. Let's see how Lamar plays. Let's have them come back 3-1, like all of that. What I'm saying to you is when I left the stadium, when I walked out of the press box, I heard a raucous celebration of young people who felt like they had never won a football game. It was never kind of cool. It was kind of fun. It was neat. Oh. But it said to me, I hope they're coming back this year and next year. And for Dick Cass, and he doesn't care because he's got millions of dollars. He won't be running the team. Whoever's running the team 10 years from now, coaching the team 10 years from now, selling the season tickets 10 years from now, they're going to need those people in the seats because I'm not going to be there anymore. You might not be there anymore. And that has been the backfill that Dick Cass has talked about for 15 years.
We were the anomaly.
We were Alabama. Never could get a ticket. Sold out. I got my PSLs. It's church. You show up. You see the same faces. That's changed. And now there's this new thing where kids gamble and I saw people at the tailgate, Don. There's no question about this. They came downtown or they're there to party outside like pickles. They weren't going into the game. That's a different thing, too, that people that come down to just party. So it was a young Sunday night beer, but I didn't see it being like – I didn't see people throwing up like that. But I saw people that aren't season ticket holders, aren't PSL holders – at a big game, having a great time, spending a lot of money to do it, clearly, and now are they going to come back? And that's my question on it.
Well, there's a lot. There's a lot there to unpack.
Well, you asked me what
I said. As you said, you and I have talked. I've talked personally with Dick Cass a number of times over the years. I think he's totally tapped in to that challenge. I think he does worry about it. As you know, I think he's one of the finest executives in all of sport. And I think he focuses like a laser beam on that issue. I agree with you 100%. And then I'm going to segue to fantasy. And we will do some politics today, I promise. But all of us, Jeff, Brian, and I commented. I've never heard the crowd as raucous as it was leaving the stadium for any game. So you picked up on that. We looked at it. That was a very, very...
That was people celebrating a great time at the stadium
right.
for one of the first times in their life. That's what I'm telling you. I have been there for all of it. The good days, the bad days, the big wins. I've never seen a championship game. I've been there for awful losses. I've been there for amazing wins, snow games, all of that. Most of those people had never seen anything like what they saw that night.
Right.
And the noise was commensurate with that. Was one of the more recent experiences for you, but luckily for you, you saw Ray Lewis dance 150 times,
yeah.
right? These people have no – Don, let me put it to you this way. How about this? What year was Jeff born?
Jeff is a bicentennial baby, 76.
76. Okay. So Jeff in 1983, when – the Orioles won the World Series. You got to see this through the eyes of a seven-year-old who may have known who Brooks Robinson or Boog Powell or Louis.
Oh, I guarantee you he did. It's so,
but and maybe saw the pictures of McNally jumping or heard your stories of losing your dog at the air at Friendship Airport.
He sure as heck knew how to chant Eddie, Eddie.
Okay, fair enough. But it was the first time he got to do it. Everything with the Ravens, all of us experienced for the first time over the first 25 years. We're now getting on to that point where Jeff's going to be going to the games, not with you, but with his kids.
Sure.
Because they're going to be entering that phase. He might want my tickets, literally, right? He might want the two below yeah. and let the kids sit there, and then you can have a family affair. And that's going to be the next 10 years for you. But for a lot of people, it because of price – It's $150. It's $195 that they charge for the ticket next to you for the guy that glared at me funny like I didn't belong there, which, again, you know, it speaks to where we are, where I'm in my seat that I've been in for 26 years, and some jackass is looking at me like, what am I doing in the
what
front
do you
row?
Care? What do you care how somebody looks
no,
at
No, no. So what on, I'm saying is on, it's boy. Not the same people. I was enjoying these games with you. Some of them are dead. Bobby Nick's dead. Lori Sheely's dead. Other people have sold their tickets
off. Yeah, well, that's,
off
like, of all that's, you know, so that's circle of life.
No doubt about it. Now it's a new thing. And the new thing isn't the old thing where it's always the same people in the same seats because they were that vested. They need your grandkids to be that vested in a way my kid is. My kid's 37 years old. My kid was not going to spend $300 to be in the upper deck the other night. He's not. That's not what he's going to do.
No. I hear you. I hear you. And I know people. I mean, it gets in. It's all tied in together. I've said to you for a number of years, and I am truly a dinosaur on this, and people laugh out there when they say, as you know, one of the things I hate, hate's a strong word. One of the things I'm not a fan of, hate's not the right word. I do not, and you and I agree on this, I think. People hear us disagree all the time. I think it's something we totally agree on. I don't get fantasy football at all. And I actually think, and I know it's led to the red zone, which I do love. I love the red zone. And I know that it's piqued interest among a very different kind of football fan. I would tell you that in some ways, fantasy has really, really been the goose and the golden egg story for the NFL in the sense that I think it's a strange thing when people aren't rooting for their home team, if they're looking at another game and hoping somebody on a team that we want to lose, they want them to score. It's just strange.
You see that through your grandkids because they
they all think I'm goofy. They all love fantasy.
I mean, people gamble on it too, and we've talked at length with Sandy Rosenberg this week about gambling. Right. I talked to John Martin of the Maryland Lottery about you know sports gaming and where that is with the lottery and with other things that are going on.
I really dislike, almost close to hate. Again, I'll avoid the term. I really have an issue with the gambling and the way all of the sports franchises have embraced it.
It's here to stay.
I almost lose my mind, and I think I'm pretty easygoing guy. I almost lose my mind when every night before the Oriole game as part of pregame. I've got to go do the FanDuel thing and what the odds are. And I'm thinking, too darn easy for young folks and old folks all across the country to pick up a phone and go and make a bet. I think it's a slippery slope, Nestor. And I think we're going to have a real social cost to pay because of all of this sports betting. I hope to be wrong, but
I'm just not interested in it, you know? So when baseball's trying to hook me in through gambling, they're coming at me the wrong way. Baseball hooked me in. You know why baseball hooked me in, Don? And the part that I'm so pissed about through all of this 30 years is the Baltimore thing. You know, the part where it's supposed to matter to the community and be a part of the community. And this is where the baseball team's been tremendously disappointing through trying to court Washington, take the name off the team, the Orioles, and they're going to come back. Then they're going to fight with Washington for, you know, all of your grandchildren's lifetime. They're now in a 15-year war. And it was all about Baltimore for you over in Catonsville. It was all about Baltimore for me and Dundalk coming through Highlandtown and going after Memorial Stadium. They're corporate entities now, and
and as you know, I'm able to.
The local part of it is starting to get fractured when the seat next to me is $195 in the upper deck now, right?
As you know, I always separate the corporate part, as I've said to you a million times. It's entertainment to me, and the reason that the Orioles moving forward excite me is that
it's good citizenship for me.
I think for the first time, as I've said repeatedly on here, there are actually four or five players who actually are bona fide major league players that I believe you can win with. And as much of a struggle as this has been, this is weird. The Orioles recently lost a game to the Phillies where they were leading late. And I was like, come on, Phillies. I mean, this is how weird it is. I actually, if we could end the season now and lose the last 11 games, I'd be tickled pink. Because I want the 1-1 next year. I want the next Rushman. And I want my grandchildren.
They got you right where they want you, man.
I want the grandchildren.
You're rooting for them to lose. It's Stockholm Syndrome.
I want the grandchildren to go to a
I know you want to do some politics. So, I mean, I do sports around here. We've done a lot of sports betting.
Let's go
out to Baltimore Positive because it is really top of mind as football season starts and we start a season in Las Vegas. There's no doubt about it.
Well, let's do some politics. I mean, really disappointing news the last few days. And boy, I think it's indicative of so much that is happening on the national scene. When I saw that talks had collapsed regarding the ability to get a police reform bill through the United States Congress, to me, that was so telling. And let me tell you why, Nestor. That bill that Karen Bass and Cory Booker had worked on for months and months with Republicans led by South Carolina Republican Senator Tim Scott, that compromise bill was endorsed by the FOP. But the Republicans,
because they don't want dirty cops in there.
Yeah, exactly. But Republicans anymore just purely govern by focus group and the base. And they realize that holding police officers accountable, even though it was supported by the FOP, is not popular with the base. To the point where Tim Scott, and by all accounts, Tim Scott's an admirable guy. He's a conservative African-American Republican. Well, we like some conservative African-American Republicans. We like Michael Steele. We think he's a fine guy. Tim Scott puts out a press release that says the deal fell apart because the Democrats wanted to defund the police. And I looked at that and I thought, well, that's not true. So then I went and found an interview with Cory Booker, who immediately points out that there was several hundred million dollars in the compromise to supplement police training in communities all over the United States. The defund the police sounds good. The Democrats have never run on defund the police. They've never supported defund the police. Their presidential candidate renounced defund the police, but Republicans like the soundbite, and Tim Scott puts it out in a press release. The reason I mention all that, I am in a minority among my Democratic friends who I have great respect for that I meet with on a weekly basis. They continue to believe that the Democrats will be able to pass an infrastructure bill and a budget bill. My response to that is, in a Congress that couldn't pass the low-hanging fruit of police reform without putting out an inflammatory press release on the part of the Republicans, why on earth would I think that the Democrats will be able to pass a reconciliation bill and an infrastructure bill? If they do, then I will say this: several people will have skills beyond what we could ever imagine. And we know at least one does. We know Speaker.
Well, it's kind of amazing how the Democrats can't get anything done when they're controlling things like that. That is the most frustrating part of all of it, is that the will of 70-80% of the population on things like Roe versus Wade, on things like guns, on things like that, we can't get an ounce of progress. We're no further along than we were before Sandy Hook, than we were before the Mandalay Bay slaughter. Like, all of these things that have been common sense in places where common sense role, we've gotten further and further away from that.
Well, a number of us have said, but Nestor, that's a really, really insightful point. Let me tell you what one of the problems is. There's many, but here's one. A number of us, I think, now agree that it's time for the United States, and there's a downside to this, but it's time for the United States to become much more of a parliamentary form of government. And what that means is you'll have left turn, right turns, much more frequently than you traditionally would in the United States. And what I mean by that is the way for that to happen is to truly just get rid of the filibuster and recognize that whichever party is in control of 50 seats and 51 if you don't have the White House. So let's say 51 seats if you don't have the White House will control the United States Senate, fully recognizing that the work you've done may be undone by the next Congress. In order for that to work, however, the Democrats need at least two, and there may be others who just are hiding behind Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. There may be four or five other moderate Dems who don't really want to get rid of the filibuster. Because remember, as long as the filibuster is there, it even protects some moderate Democrats who have much tougher states and districts, who don't really want to bring about some of this progressive change.
But all of this is rooted in how do I keep my job as a politician?
Exactly right. Exactly. And that's
I mean, there are 5% of politicians probably in the whole country right now who don't need the gig, who just ran because the way I would run, with the way I was going to run for mayor, which is, hey, you want me to run it for a couple years? I'll run it. I'm not looking to be a lifer politician. That's a different kind of human being that used to serve the country. I know we had your friend, retired Brigadier General, on this week, Donald Shank. Everyone should listen to that piece. But there used to be a sense of service in this. Not a sense of I'm going to get the lifetime badge and have a gig for life by sticking my finger into the wind and being clever at what bullshit I can feed people on a daily basis and get elected 3 years later. I saw Ted Cruz the other day. I mean, the most disingenuous human being I've ever seen.
Right.
And I guess one of the issues with Hogan that, you know, us sitting with Hogan was, I don't know that I really believed his bullshit about voting for Reagan. Like, I think it was about getting votes. That'll be some raw meat. And I'm offended by that as a citizen, because I don't think it's a way to run a government.
Yeah, you and I don't want to go back over. You and I disagree.
No, but I need Governor Hogan to know that you're doing this for the right reason.
Yeah, I think Governor Hogan, as I said to you before, I think he did that as a protest vote. You can say he should or shouldn't have, but I think he did it as a protest vote. Some good friend of mine said the other day, evidently Al Franken's back out doing stand-up, and one of his jokes is, you have to understand that I like Ted Cruz way more than any other person in the United States Senate. And I hate Ted Cruz. His point was, there's literally no one.
How does that guy get elected
in the United States Senate? Wait, that can
what,
even
what
be,
is the IQ you know, of anyone that would vote for him? Like that? Well, that's what that or what is in it for you other than you just like that contrary? No. You think that's good for government to have an idiot?
Yeah, it's a bit of that Trumpism, and we've talked about it.
Dude got on a plane and left his people with his family to run to Cancun.
Right. To go to Cancun.
Dude should have been. In the old days, he'd have been hung the minute the plane landed. But like, literally, the people would have gone down and said, you're done. You're over with.
It's as simple as, and whoever thought you could break down politics to a bumper sticker, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And the bottom line is, since Ted Cruz, this is where Trumpism is, this is where the Republican Party has devolved. Since Ted Cruz makes people like you and me insane, the base says, he's our guy. We don't care about all this other stuff. He makes Mueller and Aparicio and all their Twinkie friends crazy. That's simply what Trump has tapped into. And the issue is...
But our country is diminished.
Yeah, but see, I don't think... Again, you're thinking General Schenck. You're thinking on a much bigger service to the nation. And unfortunately, Nestor... That's not what... Nestor, I just saw a poll... that unpopular doesn't even begin to describe the Texas abortion law. 70% of the American public
Well, let's
disapproves.
Start with 52% of them have vaginas. Let's start with that.
70%
and then let's move from, and then the other 18% are like you who have a wife you like and a daughter you like and grandchildren you like. Yeah, we're talking about the sanctity of... of half of our population's freedom.
But that includes, Nestor, 40% of the Republicans. Here's what's happening and what should terrify everyone, and I'm getting ready to write about this. Ken Burns has talked about it recently, noted documentarian. John Meacham has talked about it recently. I do not think that folks fully have a grasp of how fragile our democracy is, and truly how much of a balance it is hanging on. And it is clear, I think, to everyone.
Well, you had a woman storm the Capitol, cross the line, walk into the Congress, stick her head into and get it shot off, and they've martyred her.
Yeah, it did not happen. It was a normal tourist day. And
as we sat here and watched it, you talk about teetering in our democracy.
Oh, no, it's teetering.
We watched it January 6th.
And here's what's going to happen. I hope.
And now we've seen the paperwork that was written to create the coup, and we're going to allow this as a nation to stand. It disgusts me every
morning. Well, we've seen the memos that say to the president and his team, just so you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the voting machines. There's no fraud. The Dominion machines work just fine. And they went out and said the machines were all fixed. So the truth, that's my point, and it's not hyperbole.
Truth
and I know
get
folks,
them elected.
Folks are rolling their eyes. But here's where we are, unfortunately. I think everyone believes that the celebrity president will run again. He will be nominated. It won't even be close. Nobody's going to challenge him. Other than Liz Cheney and maybe a Kinzinger, most Republicans have chosen the guy in Ohio just to walk away. So, you know, conservative, rock-rib Republican conservatives are just walking away, and they're going to leave the party to a man and his minions who will have us believe that elections no longer matter, that free elections aren't capable of being held in the United States anymore.
By the way, you know, the Taliban thinks that too. Same philosophy.
It's that terrifying. It's not a sound bite. And you see it particularly in boards of ed. There's a lot being written that the canary in the coal mine is this crazy stuff happening in boards of education all over the country. I had hoped, as you had, that when Trump went down, Republicans would have stuck a stake in the heart of the vampire and ended it. Instead, Lindsey Graham and others read the tea leaves and said, boy, the base still loves this guy.
How do I survive?
We know he's right? insane. Yes, I'm not willing to put my country ahead of me. That is a wonderful way to say it, Nestor, that you alluded to. Lindsey Graham is smart. He looked at it and he said, I have an option. I can go out as Romney has and tell the truth and tell people
as Liz Cheney has, as Kinzinger has. Right.
Or I can say, I still love the Donald. I love going down there. I mean, Lindsey loves going to Mar-a-Lago and playing golf. And Lindsey chose the trappings and the gold of Mar-a-Lago versus being a true American hero. And as more and more, Master, there was, I love the show, The Circus. If you don't watch The Circus, you could, it's 30 minutes on Showtime. It's the best. It's irreverent. It's the kind of thing you would like. It's hosted by John Heilman and Alex Wagner, Mark McKinnon. It's a terrific show, and it takes a look back at the week in politics. They interviewed a state senator from Florida the other night who's running for Congress, who said the real battle now is within the Republican Party to get rid of liberals like Mitch McConnell and others, liberals like Mitch McConnell and others, and let the party become what it really is, which is the party of people like him, Matt Gaetz, Paul Gosar, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And he said, and we hope that can happen peacefully. The inference being that if it can't, we're ready for armed insurrection. People are saying the truth out loud, Nestor. We better believe them, and we better pay attention. And that, my friend, is the recon.
He is Don Moeller, a former Baltimore County executive. We are getting ready for football around here. Luke is out in Owings Mills doing all things purple for you. All, of course, brought to you by Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. The Planet Fitness has been involved with us for a long time. Victor Brick's going to join us next week. They have a 10-day, the John W. Brick Foundation has a 10-day meetup going on in early October to clear the mind, clear the spirit. I think we could all use a little bit of that. I'll be telling you a little bit more about that next week. And we've had some great, great guests here at Baltimore Positive all week. You can find all that we do. Our podcast is available anywhere, as well as the website itself. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, anywhere the Ravens are. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. That's the recon, and we are Baltimore Positive.